And we're back to another exciting episode of Extra Credit, the show where we just take some time out of our crazy, wonderfully, not really wonderfully, but busy week.
What happened during your week? Was it not good?
It's been a long week, okay? I've been celebrating all week, and it's just been taking its toll. No, it's just been
okay, well, apparently I wasn't invited to that birthday party.
No, it was just being stuck on Breath of the Wild for like every day this week and knocking out like divine beasts and achieving trial wins and everything else. So
we have to talk about this after the podcast.
We will have to talk about this. We are the Filmlosophers. My name is Eddie, and with me is my co-host, Mr. Spencer Williams.
Sup.
And we took some time out of today to kind of go deviate from the norm. And usually we record our Extra Credit episodes at Oblivion Comics and Coffee, the place where we can get all the great comics as well as some really delicious coffee. However, we wanted to just tone it down a bit and just relax. We actually just finished watching one of the horror films that I have Spencer listed on as seeing this month. And yeah, so we're here at Studio B for VGB Studios, and we're sitting back and we're excited for what's to come. We got some great stuff in store for you in the coming weeks. One of the things we do want to let you know is we do have a trivia night coming up. If you are in the Sacramento area, October 26th is the Halloween Trivia Extravaganza at Oblivion Comics and Coffee. It is promoted by Oblivion as well as put on by the incredible video Sacramento's number one video game podcast, VGB, or Video Game Bang, as well as the Filmlosophers.
Yeah.
So we are a part of that. Also, another co-sponsor to the event is Halloween Comic Fest, which is also going to be October 26th as well. So we're just going to be having a huge night. If you don't know what we're talking about, or if you want more details, head over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and click on the link for the event at the very top, and it'll give you a ton of details. Spaces are limited, so if you're interested in signing up, head on down. We got some great stuff in store. But speaking of Halloween, we got us a great episode today because we just finished the next leg of Spencer's journey into understanding horror. Now, if you haven't been listening as of late,
you've been missing a lot.
You've been missing a lot because
I've been going on quite the adventures.
I mean, in all honesty, it's been just one revelation after another. First off, we started out this journey with Spencer just utterly saying he hates horror movies. And then we came to the revelation that Spencer doesn't even know what a horror movie is.
What even is a horror movie? Who knows? They're undefinable.
We defined it last week. There is a definition. And then we went from that to recognizing that Spencer just doesn't pay attention to certain parts in films, especially if there's a song involved.
Yeah.
So we learned that as well. And that was actually with our most recent episode where we talked about the wonderfully classic holiday film Nightmare Before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And that was Lesson. Let's see. Oh, don't laugh.
Thought you're going to be all ready to go with this.
188. So that's that lesson, which is a great lesson. It was a fun episode. And yeah, we're excited to see all those ones, or to see you guys check those out. So if you don't get a chance to check them out here, check them out on our website at filmlosophers.com and so forth and so forth. But yeah. Spencer is slowly moving into the realm of understanding a lot of that, and it's okay. Spencer's gradually getting into the mindset of seeing what actual good horror movies there are out today in this day and age. And one of those movies we actually just recently saw, and that was Insidious.
Yeah.
Now, Insidious, I don't know if many people have ever seen Insidious, but Insidious is the film directed by James Wan. It stars Patrick Wilson, Rose Byrne, the kid from the kid from Iron Man 3, Ty Simpkins.
Yeah, he's older now.
He's much older now.
Since he showed up in Endgame.
Well, Insidious was done back in 2010.
Right.
But, yeah. And then, so James Wan was a writer. Lee Whannell, I forget. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. But he's one of the writers. He's also in the film, much like how he did with Saw. He was a writer for the film, and he also played the other guy who was chained in the bathroom with Cary Elwes. So, but we just recently saw this film, and it was an interesting experience because I actually I had seen this film prior, and getting Spencer to see it was a very interesting ordeal because Spencer,
I don't understand how. Well,
that's why.
Well, I don't even know.
It's like for Spencer, it's hard to be able to prepare to show something, you know, to you because you're the type of person who tends to research the heck out of stuff. It's like
I just
all the time.
Things like, oh, what's this about? And then, you know, get the basic premise. / story.
No. you end up going through like all the details, all the trivia. You look at all the information. Then you find yourself looking at the ending. And you're like, oh, well, that's dumb. And it's like, well, it probably wouldn't have been portrayed dumb if you actually seen it and not read somebody else's perspective on it. So we got a chance. We literally stepped away from the TV about 20, 30 minutes ago. And are now sitting at the studio table, and I'm interested because this is one of those movies that is not like many other films. It's not like you know, your Paranormal Activities, or it's not like your, you know, your Saws, or it's not like, you know, it's a very different ghost movie in its form,
right?
And it's a unique take on it because I was telling you right before the film started getting going, I was like, well, James, one of the unique things about this film is James Wan actually wanted to create a film that wasn't fully relying on jump scares. Because
it's not.
Yeah. Which jump scares are essentially in every one of the films nowadays. It's ridiculous how many times jump scares are overused in films. And in all honesty, it's a cheap trick.
Yeah.
You know, if you turn anything loud enough, it could be Barney, it'll scare you because it's a loud noise. You know, not to say that Barney's not scary because he's pretty scary.
Yeah, yes.
But
especially 80s Barney. If you've never seen that.
Wait, there's an 80s Barney?
Yeah. Or either early 90s or late 80s Barney.
I'm just not wanting to see any Barney. I'm good. but luckily, Spencer has been having a great open mind about this. And we got some other great stuff to watch because obviously as Halloween comes closer and closer, we're going to have to see some more unique and iconic horror films to really bolster a lot of the conversations that we're going to have and whatnot. But I do have to say this was one of those films that sadly I've only seen a few times, maybe two or three times, but it's been so long and few and far between,
right,
that I knew it was a good movie, but I wasn't too sure how much you were going to, because here's one of the great things about Spencer. Spencer's very, don't take this to your head, okay? Uh-huh. But he's very intelligent when it comes to figuring things out in films, and that bugs me, because we'll watch a movie, and he'll figure out, like, oh, well, yeah, this is going to happen, this is probably going to happen, that's probably going to happen. It's like, you don't know. We go and see the movie, and it happens. Like, shut up. So it's like with when it comes to this, it was a little kind of concerning to me because it's like, okay, if I show him this film, and I swear to God, if he pops up like 30 minutes into it, like, oh yeah, I've seen this, or oh yeah, this is gonna happen, oh yeah, I expected that to happen, or whatever, then I'm like, crud, because I didn't really have anything else in my back pocket at the time. But thankfully, that wasn't the case with this film. You thought at one point you'd seen parts of it, but in its fullest form, you hadn't seen it, which
yes,
is a good thing.
I've only seen parts of this at most.
Okay. So, not knowing, because I didn't tell you what movie we were going to see until day of.
Yeah.
Because I kept it from you.
Yes,
because I knew the way you are.
Yes.
So not knowing the movie until the day of, only knowing the title, I didn't even give you a premise of the film.
No.
What were your expectations coming in? What were you thinking?
How could I possibly have any?
Well,
you could have
shown
me like Rainbow Bright for all I know. Because
Rainbow Bright?
Yeah.
You went to Rainbow Bright?
That's scary for an adult male.
That's...
I don't want
to
watch
it's
that.
It's scary that an adult male would watch it is probably the part you're trying to say.
There you go. Scary movie.
with all the expectations for how the month of October is going, because it's only going to ramp up more from here. Like the next movie I'm going to show you is probably going to be a little bit more intense and so forth and so forth and so forth. With the expectations of where you are right now and how horror has been re-portrayed to you through these films, how is your view of horror changing?
Well, I guess it's not the lack of a lot of these movies were a lot better than I thought they were going to be. Because like before we started this entire endeavor, I kind of just assumed, well, based on what I saw,
mm-hmm.
that most horror movies didn't really think that their audience could think. Like a lot of things were just kind of
just true
telegraphed like super early on, and like other movies do this too for bewildering reasons, but I felt like it happened a lot more in like the horror genre, where like you could just figure out what was happening before it even happened,
which makes sense. Yeah. I mean you look at we talked about this before, you look at early 90s 80s horror films. 80s seems to be this gray area for a lot of genres. Like you take animation, 80s were kind of that like, well, are we still doing that? Are we not? And that's where Disney came out of its, you know, came into the whole Renaissance era and everything, whatnot. You know, even like crime films or like action sequences, action films who kind of like were rebirthed in the 80s into becoming what they needed to be, but they were still super corny and cheesy. Horror was that time frame, because in the 70s you had a lot of very unique horror. You had like the slasher horror, you had the Italian horror, you had a lot. And then the 80s came along and America's like, let me put down my beer, see if we could do this. And they decided to create like slasher films and iconic monsters and horror icons from Freddy Krueger to Jason Voorhees to Michael Myers to, well, Michael Myers was late 70s, but like even things like ridiculous things like the Toxic Avenger and Swamp Thing. And please tell me you know who these.
Yeah, I'm lightly. I know they exist.
Okay.
And that's pretty much all I can say to those two.
Sounds like a plan to me. So, I mean, if you're used to just seeing either 80s horror films or movies that are similar in flavor, I guess, if you want to say, to 80s horror, then it makes sense of your hesitance.
Yeah, I think I probably, yeah, because I didn't have cable as a kid, so I would have been restricted to whatever they were showing on, like, the over-the-air broadcast channels,
uh-huh.
And I feel like I saw a lot of 80s stuff.
Well, and see, you and I didn't grow up too differently, because I didn't have cable either. However, my dad was proactive in terms of like, all right, well, there's literally nothing on. So we would frequent like thrift stores and whatnot and buy VHS tapes of everything.
Oh.
And so we would get these movies and we would watch them all. And they would be like older movies, younger movies, whatever movies, like everything. Black and whites, color, sound, no sound, kind of like talkies, silent films, stuff like that.
Oh, you have to go back to the word talkies. That's interesting. Well, they put that on VHS and like just
well, they have
stores?
Like the classic ones. Like they have the ones that are like, okay. You know, like, this second rate collection of vintage silent films that you never heard of because nobody really cared when they first came out, kind of thing.
Okay.
Like weird collections like that. You know, little two VHS tape versions or whatever. Side note, I'm still like that. Like, I will buy those cheap knockoff collections of, like, you know, iconic horror films from whatever, check them out. And you go and there's like one iconic horror movie and there's like 20 other on the, like on the Blu-ray or DVD, there's 20 other movies that are just like so obscure. It's like, oh, check out Vincent Price's iconic film. And it's like Vincent Price is in there for like 2 seconds and it's some old, old movie. I digress. But yeah, I spend a lot of time watching a lot of movies on a VCR. You know, and then when I got, I ended up winning our family's first DVD player in a game.
Oh, well, that's fun.
So I won a DVD player and we ended up started buying DVDs. Oddly enough, my first DVD was Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, Guy Ritchie movie. I didn't realize that what I had bought until I was like, oh, okay. And my family was like, what the heck did you get that for? But yeah. It's just the expectations of what you were expecting. Has that shifted in terms of like no longer expecting the cheap B style horror film that you're used to?
Yeah, just basically someone hearing a noise and then going out into the garage when you know there's a confirmed killer in the area.
Stacy, did you hear that chainsaw? I better go investigate.
Yeah, that little stuff. Actually, yeah, my views have changed dramatically. Like, because
yes,
even just walking this one, I'm like, okay, well, let's see what they got. Which is a far cry from the, ugh, I don't want to watch this. This is going to be stupid. Blah, blah, blah,
true,
blah, blah.
Very true.
So, yeah, I'm actually kind of impressed. You've done a good job, Eddie.
Thank you. Yes. Because thus far, if we're looking in total, aside from films outside of the month of this month of October, because if we were to go outside, we'd be like, well, you also saw It, the first It, and then you saw the original. So you saw the first It Chapter 1 film back in 2017. You saw that one, then you saw the original in 1990, 93, that 3-hour extravaganza. You saw the second film. You saw Mother, which I would technically like categorize that.
I would not, because it's too confusing to be tense.
It's psychedelic and scary, and there's creepy scenes in that film.
No, like you can wrap up that entire movie.
The way the whole film ends
was just mind-boggling.
It's scary.
I don't.
She burns everybody in that house. Spoiler alert. After they tear apart her baby and eat the remains.
Not surprising. I would have too.
How does that not sound like a horror film to you?
Because it's too confusing to be like,
it doesn't matter if you're confused. The first thing that you look at, you're like, I don't want to be here. Like, you're scared and then you're confused. Let's be honest. You're fearful first, and then you're confused.
Yes,
because of the fear and the and being.
No, you're not confused because of the fear. You're confused because a whole bunch of nonsense is going on, and it doesn't seem like you're having a hard time putting it all together. And that's what the only reason why that's not a horror movie to me, really, it's because confusion and chaos become the rule at the end of the movie, and that's what it leaves you with, a confusing feeling.
Well, at the end of the film, I'm talking about the whole 2 hours that you have to sit there watching the whole thing. Like, then there's somebody who kills somebody, and then there's people that are like, there's war happening in the house, and there's like, there's just...
Yeah, it's nonsense.
It is complete nonsense. It's like if you were to take a trip into the mindset of Nicolas Cage while he's napping. This is what I feel like this movie is. The best way, because the moment he wakes up is when everything burns down. So aside from those horror films, if we're looking at everything that you've seen thus far, you have seen Trick or Treat. You saw Identity.
Yeah.
You saw The Nightmare Before Christmas. And now you've seen Insidious. All right, so you've seen 4 horror films this month so far.
Yeah.
And so far we're on a good streak.
Yeah.
So now talking about Insidious.
Yes.
What were your initial thoughts as soon as this movie was over?
I liked it a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah. I guess The only thing is, like, it seemed like a weird place to end it, and then you told me that they had sequels. I didn't mm-hmm. realize that.
Which now I'm wishing I hadn't told you.
Okay, I'm going to try not to judge anything based on the trailer.
We're over here. We just Spencer was like, "Oh, that was really interesting. That was whatever." And then I showed him the trailer for the second. He's like, "Yeah, I don't know anymore. You know, they need to kill the mom off already and just get rid of her."
Okay, here's the thing about this mom character. She is the least mom character I've ever seen ever. Like, going off my own mom.
And yet in every film she's in, she plays the mom character.
Ah, gosh.
Maybe Hollywood has the wrong perception of what moms do.
I feel like yes, because most of the moms I know are very observant and, like, they're on their kids. They, like, know when it's too quiet in their house that they need to go check on their kids because they're into something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this mom's just walking around the house. There's some random kid standing in the corner. She just walks on by like she didn't see it. Like, I feel...
That was in the trailer, though.
No.
Are you talking about in the film?
Yeah, this was actually in the movie. Yeah, not that one. Like, in the movie, like, right before that, like, old song plays in the new house.
Yeah.
That kid standing in the corner, she just walks past him. Like, I understand it's a new house, but that's a person.
Are you talking about when he's in the house and she's outside of it?
Right before that, when she's walking through all of those rooms, he's standing in the corner as she walks right by him on her way out the house. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you're upset because the mom is a ditz.
Yeah. She's okay. Not a real servant. Come on. Like, you think something
was
happening.
No mom is perfect, Spencer.
Okay, but, like, this specific mother is in a situation where she thinks spiritual beings are attacking her child.
Well, at this point, she doesn't anymore because they left the house, remember?
Yeah, but, like, you ever know, like, have you ever been in, like, a tough situation, but then you get out of it, but then you're still kind of looking behind you just to make sure? Like, she's like, oh, it's over? Like, over? Really? You're not going to...
I think that's more of like a how you grew up kind of situation. Because I don't know about you, but I was threatened a lot as a child by my parents, where if I didn't get things straight, things would hit me. And so it was always like, hey, go clean your room. Go clean your room. I'm going to throw this at you if you don't clean your room.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, okay, I'm going. And I would walk and then... Then I would get hit and be like, what the heck? She's like, you weren't moving fast enough. It's like, so I understand the anxiety of still, you may be out of a situation, yet you're still aware that the situation happened.
Yeah.
However, I think that's just the way we grew up.
Okay.
Because certain... I'm pretty sure there's certain people who are like, oh, no, you're done with this. Go ahead. You can go and play. Or you're fine. Go ahead and do what you were going to do. And they allowed their kids to do whatever they're going to do. Mm-hmm. There was no repercussions. There was no follow-up question. There was no flying shoe or sandal or, you know, soup spoon. Like, there was nothing, there was nothing that was going to follow up with the repercussions. And so... I just think it's a matter of the way you were raised. Because I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm like, in my household, anything could be used as a disciplinary weapon. So, and it was always, I was never moving fast enough, or I wasn't responding fast enough, or wasn't... And mind you, I didn't get beat as a child. Just I grew up in a Mexican household.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole chancla story is so true and everything. So I say all that to say I get the like, you're out of the house, but you're still aware of like all your surroundings and situations.
Yeah.
Which makes sense to us. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm tracking with you.
But yeah, Rose Byrne, it's weird. She always plays that character, especially in the most recent film she did that. What is that? She did that movie with Mark Wahlberg where they play foster parents.
Yeah.
Well, so
I've seen the poster, but I can't really place like, you know, where it was.
It's called Instant Family.
Oh, I thought that's what it was too.
Last year's film, Instant Family, with her and Mark Wahlberg, where they bring in a couple of foster children, essentially siblings. So, which is interesting, but nevertheless, yeah. Oddly enough, the film we didn't choose to go see this week, Jexy, she plays Jexy. So, so there's a loose connection for you.
Look at her. Still doing things.
So, aside from that, so one of the great things about this film is its ability to not rely, as we talked about, not rely heavily on jump scares, which, sadly, has been
a mainstay
of a strong mainstay in the film community for some time now. I mean, ever since 2007's Paranormal Activity, like
that was 2007.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, dang.
Yeah, like ever since Paranormal Activity was like a strong, you know, contender in the box offices for like its ability to scare people. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's pretty consistent with it is its jump scares. Like the whole boom, and then everyone like, ah! Or like loud noises with high piercing sounding like soundtracks and compositions. That film essentially paved the way for every movie since 2007 in the horror genre, and even not in the horror genre, even outside of it, films that wanted to use the idea of jump scares took a page out of Paranormal Activity's book. So, which is why, like, one of the films, and I don't think we're going to be able to see it, because I don't think we'll have time, but one of the films that really has my attention, has always been super unique, is a movie from 2008 called The Strangers. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Never heard of it.
It stars Liv Tyler, Scott Speedman. They essentially play this couple who are leaving, like, a wedding, and they... I don't know if they go to like a cabin or they're at like a, it's not like an Airbnb, but they're somewhere, or it might even be their home. Might be their home. I don't know. But like they go home and it's late at night and like, I guess he forgets something. He has to go get something from the store or something, whatever. So he goes, but before he leaves, these three people show up to the door and knock on the door and they end up like unscrewing the light bulb by the door. And they're like, they give some random name like, is Patricia here? And they're like, there's nobody here by that name. And they like freeze and then they take off. And then through the whole film, there's not really a strong like cinematic soundtrack to it. Hmm. Like there's one of the great scenes from that film. Liv Tyler is literally standing at a sink. She's washing dishes. There's no music. All it is ambient noise. You hear the water, you hear the faucet. You hear like the you just hear like the wind outside, and you're looking at her from the front of the sink, looking towards her face, and you see over her shoulder on the other side of the room, and you see somebody coming in with like a burlap mask. He just walks in, looks around, looks at her, and then he just steps back out and leaves. And it's like, that is creepy as all get out. Like, because that's the kind of stuff that you actually think is going to happen, whether you're in your kitchen or in your car or wherever you are. It's scary.
Yeah.
So that's a really great film to kind of capitalize on the idea of you don't need jump scares to create solid filmmaking.
Yeah.
And especially in this case with Insidious, a lot of the points that really cause you to jump or stir are genuine because you don't expect it. It's not like a, you know, everything's quiet and all of a sudden this super loud screeching noise happens in like a millisecond to kind of get you to like, oh my gosh, I'm bleeding out of my ear. Like it's not anything like that. The scenes are well composed and they're legitimately like creepy. I don't know. Would you agree?
Yeah, no. I think that you brought it up that like, jump scares are also part of the reason why I think that most of the movies aren't really, like, they don't have to be smart when you're just playing super loud music. I don't remember which movie it was, but there was a movie, it had to have been, like, either Us or Get Out, and I was mad at one of them because at one point they just played like a loud noise near the beginning, and I'm like, this wasn't even scary, and there was no need for it.
Well, at the beginning of Get Out is when that guy gets abducted while he's in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And that's when they use that little...
I can't remember which one it was, if it was one of those, but I think it was.
I think it was Get Out.
Okay.
Because that whole scene where he's trying to walk home and then that car pulls over and they...
That's still a fantastic scene.
It's an incredible film altogether. But the great thing about it is that film does not rely on that type of scare, mm-hmm. because... If it did, it would really suck.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no offense, and this is probably going to upset whoever loves these types of things in the film, but jump scares they're debilitating to horror films because then it loses any legitimacy for it carrying any real scare.
Or real creativity.
Or real creativity.
Because I feel like that kind of just, like, I was going to say nerf, but I don't want to use that word.
No, well, nerf's a good word too.
Yeah, but basically, like it
nullifies.
It nullifies like a creative flow through the movie of like,
yeah,
I could scare you in any way instead of just defaulting to it's going to be a loud noise.
Like you can seriously make like any kind of PG or G movie and just add in points that the music is like instantly sent from like 100 decibels to 1,000 decibels instantly in like a millisecond and drop it back down. Like that's a jump scare. These films here, like Insidious, don't rely on that. And the scenes that are happening, they are ramping horrific scenes that kind of terrify you. Like case in point, there's a scene where one of the characters in the film is, what is she? She's played by... What's her name? Now I'm drawing a blank. The woman Elise, she's kind of, I don't even know what she is. She's played by Lynn Shea. But she's the person who comes in to kind of help mediate to figure out how to get their kid to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where her and Lee Wannell are doing this thing where she's describing something to her and he's drawing it. And the whole ramp up of like her looking, you can tell she's like looking dead in the eye of whatever it is that she's wanting him to draw.
Yeah.
And it's like building, and the mm-hmm. intensity goes from like almost quiet to you hear him scribbling on the paper. You hear her voice getting louder and louder, and the scribbling gets faster and faster. And you've seen bits and pieces of what he's looked like throughout the film because you've either seen his face, the creature, whatever this entity is that's in the house, you've seen his face or you've seen his shape. And now, like, you're seeing a legitimate, like, drawing of what he looks like. And you feel this anticipation building and building and building. And then all of a sudden, like, the mom who's, like, as frantic as we are, because I'm like, what is he drawing? Like, what does it look like? And then she goes and she rips the sketchbook out of his hands and she looks at it and she looks at the corner of the room. There's nothing there, but she looks at the sketchbook and the entity is there. And it's like, that's creepy. Like, I would have gone to turn the lights on real quick too. Like, it's that whole ramp up though that creates the terror. It creates the anxiety. It creates the feeling of like, what's going to happen next? Like, and the way this film operates, it fully operates in that. Like, there isn't any point where it's made to make you feel like they're cheap scares because they didn't know what to do in this particular scene. Like, this scene has this because it helps build with this rapport for this character. Like the scene where the mom and the mother-in-law and the husband are talking at the table. And the mother-in-law is like, I needed to come by because I had a dream and I saw this creature and he was in Dalton's room and he was pointing at Dalton's and this is what he wants and blah, blah, blah. And she looks away for a second. She's telling the story and then she looks back at her son, who's the husband.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
And it's just, he appeared right there. And it wasn't like a digitally created face. It wasn't like something computer generated or it wasn't anything like that. There was a legitimate person that looked creepy as all get out.
Yeah.
And that spooked me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the fun of it.
Yeah.
It's like you enjoy that type of creative endeavor, knowing somebody has put the work into wanting to see this film come to full fruition, so that way when you see it, you're not just seeing your interpretation of it, you're seeing the director's interpretation of it. You're seeing, like, this is the vision the director had, this is the idea or the story written by the writer on the film, and this is the love child of that, if you will.
Yeah, no, and like, they've done a tremendous job. Like, I really like this one. Like, it was well done. Like, it wasn't super obvious what was happening or, you know, how it was all going to end. And I was paying attention the whole time. It was good.
Surprisingly, you were, because I was, there were certain parts of the film that I knew were going to have unique little jumps or here and there. So I'm like, I wanted to watch you and see, like, all right, what's he going to do? How's he going to act? Because I know you. You'll be like, meh. Like, a scene will happen, and I know when you're just, like, completely just, you're doing it for the fun of it, because you're like, oh, I'll make him happy. I'll watch this, whatever. Like, I've seen you in certain movies. However, in this particular film, you were, like, fully engaged from, like, the beginning on, which that's a great telltale sign of a film to actually do that, you know, for you especially. So, I mean, hey, there you go.
Yeah, because normally, like, there's always, like, normally a, like, low rumble in my head of, like, ooh, I should think about this or do this or that, blah, blah. And, like, that was pretty much, you know, I was just focused on this film. So, like, the film got quiet for a second, and I was like, oh, crap, I got things. And then, you know, I was back into it. And I think that's just a sign of, like, what the best horror movies really should be. It's just something that are attention grabbers.
Well, and that's actually the next question I was going to ask, is where should we go from here with movies for you? Because, no, scratch that. Let's ask the better question. Where are you finding your appeal within the horror genre? Like, we have yet to touch on sci-fi horror.
Mm-hmm.
We have yet to touch on, we saw, you know, supernatural horror already, like with this one.
Mm.
But there's also, like, man-made horror, like the crazy people that are out there, like the things in the woods or the things out in the sides of the roads or whatever. There's a lot of crazy people there. And then you have elements of, like, animals, like the craziness of animals.
What, like Cujo or something?
Well, like Cujo. Or The Lion in the Darkness. It's not a horror film per se, but Lion in the Darkness is another one. Val Kilmer and Michael Douglas. They play, like, these hunters that are trying to catch this lion that is literally decimating this whole village. They're killing them. This one lion is killing them off one by one. So they have to go hunt it. Back in the mid-90s. To even, like, not just sci-fi, but, like, technological horror. You know, like, there's one that Johnny Depp did called Transcendence a few years back, where he uploads his mind into this computer. And, I mean, technically it's still sci-fi, but it's technological horror. Because did you ever see that Black Mirror episode where they had cameras in their eyes and whatnot?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's technological horror.
Okay.
Or even the one where that guy is doing the, he's doing the AR simulator test, and he goes and, like, it's actually a simulation in his brain that's happening. It's not a real simulation, but he feels it is, and it ends up, have you ever seen that one?
Not that one.
No. Oh, wow. Well, that's another technological film, but there's horror films like that, you know? So yeah, I mean, we can go any route, but where do you find yourself, like, interested in going towards next?
Well, I think I'm still in the candy store mode of, like, I want to try this one and then also this one, even though they're not related in the slightest
yet. I mean, hey, we can.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So that leaves the door open for whatever else is in the future for you.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, because I guess I haven't really ran into something I was like, I don't ever want to see this again.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's actually really good. Well, any last thoughts on this film before you give your final review of the film?
No, there is not terribly much extra I want to talk about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Spence, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
This movie passes, and I'm going to give it 4 because, I don't know, this movie just works really well.
It works really well. However, your view of the film did downshift when you saw the trailer for the second film.
That's because that's strictly related to the mom character again. Because, like, I feel like at the end of the first movie, she should have learned a little something about these spiritual entities that were after her family.
So you're saying she should have been more experienced by the second film?
Like, not like, I don't need you to be like, oh, I know what to do. It's like, you just have to read the signs and be like, oh, it's happening again. Something must be after someone. It's either my husband or my smaller child. Which one is it? Who do we need to go save? Like that, so, she should be narrow and focused on, like, okay, this is what we got to do. We've got to find a replacement for Elise because somehow she died, and apparently there were no questions about that. That seems odd, but okay.
Well, I know to stay away from sequels apparently when it comes to horror films for you.
Well,
got it.
Well, okay, maybe. It might be fine. It could just be like the thing about trailers is that they can be misleading, thanks, Disney, and they could just be bad.
Very true. It's a great case in point. So, well then, we got what we got. I got homework. I got homework to look up for the next film for you, and we'll be talking about that on our next extra credit. We're excited because, as we said, Halloween is full in swing, and we're getting ready to celebrate the season in the biggest way possible. And that is, like I said previously, with a Halloween trivia night at Oblivion Comics and Coffee. Yes. So, as I mentioned earlier, if you are in the Sacramento or even Northern California area, and you're in the Sacramento area specifically, or if you want to drive down to the Sacramento area, we will be partnering with Video Game Bang, the Sacramento's number one premier video game podcast, as well as Oblivion Comics and Coffee and Halloween Fest, Halloween Comic Fest, I believe it's called. We'll be partnering with all them to go forward and having a awesome Halloween trivia night at Oblivion Comics and Coffee. It is October 26th. It starts at 6. It is a Saturday. So We got some great stuff in store. If you haven't had a chance to check it out, Oblivion Comics and Coffee is a really great place to get your comics and your delicious coffee. And signups are available right now. So if you head over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/philosophers, you'll find the link there to head over to the signup page and get your team involved. So don't miss out because we'll be there. VGB will be there, as well as a bunch of other people dressed up and having a fun time together with like nerds and like horror fans. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode. So, as we say goodbye, remember, stay safe out there and enjoy them horror films. I'm seeing a lot of great stuff on Instagram and whatever, and just have fun, have an open mind, and be safe. So, Spence, wrap us up.
This has been Extra Credit with the Filmosophers, and we'll check you next time.
That'll do.